Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
Down 21-0 in the fourth quarter, they kicked a field goal. Fire everybody. Disband the program.
Oh yeah, another clank by Carmelo. Oh, that Porzingis!
Clank.
I like that, Dave. I'm in foreclosure because I lost my arch.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big football show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. Good to have you with us. Good to have you here for the latest football picks program amidst some borderline chaos in California right now. We are in the middle of a lot of fires here in the city, and they're not literally in the city, but they are all around it. And one of them is actually my hometown, or near my hometown of Oxnard, California. Oxnard itself is fine, but Ventura, north of Oxnard, and right next to it, really having a tough time. I mean, that's the biggest fire so far in Southern California right now, and it's about an hour away from where we are here. And yikes! I mean, that fire is called the Thomas Fire. It has burned 65,000 acres of land, roughly 82 square miles. And the worst part of all is that it's getting close to Santa Barbara. And so, unfortunately, even Santa Barbara's not, he's gone through so many fires, and here comes another one. So that's pretty tough. Another fire in Sylmar that started early yesterday. It's currently at 11,377 acres, and these reports may not be all the way up to date, but 0% contained. I think that one, man, actually, maybe that one's got a little bit of containment. Most of these have 0% containment. The next one, the closest one, which started this morning, so early Wednesday morning, about 4 a.m., is the Skirball Fire, which is really close to UCLA, and that is why the UCLA basketball game was canceled tonight. Because they're still fighting that. There's 0% containment in that. But while true, apparently no imminent threat to UCLA itself, which is still surrounded by a series of neighborhoods and buildings and a lot of stuff like that. But unfortunately, the Skirball Fire has claimed several houses and many buildings have burned down up to this point. 0% containment in that fire, and things are just beginning, I think, with fighting the fire, because today there was relatively low wind, which is great. It gave firefighters a chance to establish their ground. But the previous 2 days, it had some pretty serious wind, and tomorrow and the next day are going to have some pretty tough wind as well. So it's going to be kind of tough for the moments ahead. So that's what's happening in Southern California as we record this podcast tonight. I've been making notations on Twitter about the possibility of a power outage tonight. The reason is because with the high pickup of wind, power lines can go out. So the power could go out in the middle of this program. And if it does, well, we're kind of out of luck. But if you're listening to it tonight, that means we made it, and you have the program here. And sometimes what could happen is the power would go out after we record. That happened one time when John and I were doing a golf spot with Mike. And you can usually restore the program if that happens. But if it's happening in the middle of the show, probably not the case. So we'll find out as we continue to entertain everybody here on the program. I think we're still waiting on Andy in Seattle to call in. I don't have any indication that he's not going to make it. So let's switch the topic back to football. Pretty good conference championships. We had some fun in some of the games. Other games were uglier. Other games were a blowout. But definitely some juice. The bigger story, I'm sure, as you know, is the college football playoff. And we'll get into that in just a moment. We also have some coaching moves to get into in just a moment. And meanwhile, in the NFL, there's a lot of playoff chases very much alive. And Andy is with us now. And all the teams have lots on the table. We are ready to go for the college football championship. Let's hit it. Football picks, week 15. Yes, the college football playoff has been announced, and the teams in question are Clemson. See if I got this right. Clemson, Oklahoma, Georgia, and Alabama. Look at that. That's a pretty exciting 14 playoff. And in the midst of all that, a lot of coaching changes and some change in the standings of this contest. A big week for a lot of people. And it turns out that my picks were the best at 3-1 last week. But three others went 2-1-1. Andy in Seattle went 2-1-1. Ron in New Jersey went 2-1-1. John in Connecticut went 2-1-1. And our guest picker, Robert in Virginia, just smoked it. He went 4-0. So here are the standings after a very, very big week for several guys. Andy's still in first place at 29-23-2. But right behind him, only about, by my look at it, about a game back of Andy, is Ron in New Jersey at 29-24-1. And just behind that is me, Dave, in the city at 27-26-1. And John is in last at 19-33-2. The guest picks this year are, at this point, 32-20-2. So, as a whole, I think the panel's doing a very good job. And that sets us up for a very good finish with three guys only about a couple games out of the lead. So let's get our panel onto the program now, and let's get everyone back. We'll start with the leader of our contest. That would be Mr. Andy in Seattle, where I don't know if it's LOL Rain Seattle or not, but Andy, welcome. How's it going tonight?
Hey, Dave, hope all's well. You're inside getting away from them fires in the backyard. But, yeah, it's sunny and clear in Seattle today. Look at that 10 days.
Thanks for that, Andy. I appreciate it. Let's also introduce John to the program. Hey, John, how's it? Oh, John in Connecticut to the program. How's it going, John?
Good, Dave. Hope you and yours are doing well out there in California. Our thoughts are with you, certainly. But overall, doing pretty well. Actually, had a couple good winning weeks with my picks. Unfortunately, the damage was done before that. So, just playing out the string here, I guess, in terms of the selections. But certainly an interesting week of football to discuss.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks, John. Let's now bring in our guest picker, John in Stamford. John in Stamford, welcome to the program. How's it going tonight?
Hey, Dave, how are you? All the love for the people in California with the fire. And it's pretty mild here in Stamford, about 42 degrees as we speak.
That's actually kind of temperate, I must think, for that month. So good stuff, and thanks. So let's talk a little football, guys, as we look ahead. So last week was pretty interesting stuff. I mean, the SEC championship lived up to the building for about a quarter, but it was interesting. All of us last week felt like Georgia was going to have a chance and probably would win this game. And I think Robert last week even called for the outright win, and Georgia certainly did that. In fact, they practically dominated in the second half, so that was pretty interesting. Miami and Clemson. Clemson was the better in that one, and Oklahoma won in resounding fashion. And I guess when you really look at it, like, a lot of these were kind of blowout games. But there was one game that was really good, the AAC game. Memphis versus Central Florida. And in the middle of the game, they announced that Scott Frost, the coach of UCF, is going to be the coach at Nebraska. A little awkward, but a great game. And that game went to overtime, shattered the record for most points scored in the championship game. Really, really quite amazing and a very exciting game. So that among a sort of action. So let's go back to Andy, get your recap of last week's games. And we'll do coaches, since we don't have any actual games this week, we'll do coaches in the next segment. So your thoughts about last week's games.
You briefly summed it up. The Pac-12 game was a entertaining game. Didn't really have much on the line. USC, I mean, their defense just plays down to the opponent. You could see that backdoor coming from a mile away. Their offense played pretty well. Darnold had quite a show. But yeah, they weren't playing for much. So it was kind of a not quite anticlimactic Pac-12 tournament game. It was just a kind of like a useless game. But, you know, if you had money on it, if you wanted to watch the quarterback play and you had nothing else to do on that Friday night, then you went ahead and watched it. You know, the big juice obviously was on Saturday. That was a great Memphis Central Florida game. It's a shame that Central Florida is can't compete for a playoff, and they have to settle for a game against I think Auburn. So we'll see what happens there. But very entertaining game. That Memphis coach is already getting looks from, you know, not quite blue blood programs, but programs right under that threshold. And as we know, he's only been there for 2 years. Just a really entertaining high-octane game. Big 12 game was a blowout. TCU didn't really have much resistance to Oklahoma's offense. I think we can give Mayfield the Heisman at this point. 40 touchdowns, whatever it may be, up and down the field. So good job by them. The Georgia-Auburn game, definitely a grinder, you know, 10-7 halfway through the third period. And then Georgia just kind of broke through. You know, their running game was a little too much for Auburn to handle. Maybe they were feeling the effects of the big game the week before against Alabama. Miami obviously showed that they had no business being in the playoff hunt. Clemson just dominated from start to finish. And then the that Big Ten game, you know, Wisconsin did what a lot of people on the program thought they would do, just hang around. You know, they were aided really good in the start with that pick six. That really gave them a jolt of energy. But other than that, they really didn't do anything too exciting. Their quarterback, very average, you know, kind of dinked and dunked it. Ohio State didn't play all that well, but they did enough to win by six. And then I didn't see any of that Boise State, Fresno State game. I did not see any of the Arkansas State tour game. And I think we saw a little bit of the MAC game. But, oh, yeah, Toledo backdoored. Or Toledo gave up a backdoor to Akron with their third-string quarterback. So if you had an Akron show potential, that was a nice gift from the gambling gods because it was a third-string quarterback. They were, the Toledo coach had Gatorade already over. They poured the Gatorade on him already, and it was just a, you know, a useless color, but fun nonetheless. And now we look forward to the bowls, some good, some blah, and some really juicy matchups as we head towards New Year's.
Yep, and in next week's program, our finale for the football picks contest, we will do the bowl previews like we did last year, and I look forward to those bowls. You wouldn't even want to see in your backyard, but I'll say this, Andy, I mean, see if you agree. You know, there's actually a lot of pretty good ones this year. Does it feel like it's like just as commenting on the field at large, like, does it feel like it's a pretty juicy field altogether?
Well, I actually haven't really looked at the games outside of a cursory glance on Sunday night. I know last year, John, you've got good memories. He could probably remember. Last year, it feels like they had some 5-7 teams because they couldn't get enough 6-6 teams. And I think this year, they actually have some 6-6 teams that weren't involved in the bowls just because they already had all the slots filled up. So, yeah, it's funny what a year can do. Obviously, there's some really pathetic teams bowling, like Boston College, for instance. You know, Temple started out so slow there in a bowl. There's some, you know, really piss-poor 6-6 teams out there. But, you know, I think a lot of us wanted to see a potential Auburn-USC game. It didn't work out that way. But, yeah, there's some good games down the road for sure. Penn State, Washington could be entertaining. I think USC, Ohio State, despite the brand awareness and the names involved, it's kind of stale, especially knowing how Jekyll Hyde USC can be and how underwhelming Ohio State has been throughout the year. But I'm definitely going to be in all the bowls for the most part.
Yep. Sounds good. So let's go back to John in Connecticut, and let's get your recap of those same games. Anything you'd like to add as far as the conference championships?
Yeah, sure, but I'll add on to what Andy was referring to there. That is correct. Last year there were some 5-7 teams. I think there was one or two. The previous year there was like a ridiculous amount, like 4 or 5. So good to see they got enough eligible teams this year. And he's right, there was 3 teams that were bowl eligible that stayed home, and those were Buffalo, Western Michigan, and UTSA were all at 6 wins this year and stayed home. Part of that was because there's actually one less bowl game this year. The Poinsettia Bowl, which is usually a Mountain West, Conference USA matchup, or Mountain West Pac-12. It's been in the past. I think last year it was BYU and Wyoming, if I recall. That game completely disbanded, so there was one less bowl. So if that bowl had stayed around, there would have only been one team left out. So get ready for the next go-around. They'll say, oh, well, teams got left out. Let's have some more bowls, which would be fine with me. I honestly don't care. People bitch and moan about, 5-7 teams making a bowl. I mean, literally every single game is an exhibition other than the playoff game. So they don't bother me. But regardless, yeah, there's some good matchups this year. We'll have to talk about them next week. But yeah, the Iowa versus BC game, I will just say right now, is probably the worst match of a bowl season. And of course, it's in New York. It's a pinstripe bowl. Go figure. But as for conference championship weekend, I mean, I think we did a pretty good job here with our picks last week. I think we all liked Georgia over Auburn. Auburn coming off the huge win versus Bama, kind of a letdown spot. Their running backs were not healthy. I said that was a key to the game, and they certainly were not. And Georgia just ran through them, and certainly deserved to win that game and go to the SEC title, go to the playoff rather. And it's funny, if you've gotten rid of championship weekend, Auburn is clearly in the playoff and Wisconsin's clearly in the playoff, but you play the extra game for the conference championship and it knocks both of them out. I mean, Auburn, just think about it. Auburn beats both Georgia and Alabama, loses to Georgia again, and is now they're out. It's crazy to think about. Same with Wisconsin. They lose to Ohio State and they get knocked down to the Orange Bowl. Yeah, that's going to be a pretty ugly game, Wisconsin versus Miami. I don't know. That's by far of the big blazing bowls, I think that's by far the least interesting matchup. But I really didn't think Ohio State was that impressive. I think if they had won by a much larger margin, like they had done a couple of years back when they won 59-0, but I think they had won in that kind of fashion, not saying by 50 points, if they had been really dominant and won by 2 or 3 touchdowns, I think they might have gotten the nod over Alabama. But just watching that game, I mean, JT Barrett, you could tell he could barely move, and it just wasn't a incredibly impressive performance, enough anyway to overcome that 35-point loss to Iowa, like we've been mentioning all year, the last month. And the committee goes with Bama for that fourth spot. So, and, you can't blame them. I wish both teams would have been out, but I think eventually they did make the right call there. Andy did a good job with the rest of the recast. The American Conference game, I mean, that was just an unbelievable finish. I mean, hopefully some people can continue to gain respect for the AAC. And all these coaches are going to Power 5 schools. I'm sure we'll talk about it in a little bit, but obviously Frost going to Nebraska is the big news. But, just a tremendous offensive game. And Memphis, their only 2 losses on the season was to UCF. They lost to them in the regular season, and then they lost to them the other day. Otherwise, they're 10-0 on their schedule. So that was a great game and well-deserved for UCF to win. And the interesting thing about that is, which you never see happen, Scott Frost takes the job at Nebraska, okay? His whole staff is going to stay and coach the bowl game, which is just crazy. So I actually give him a fighter's chance against Auburn because he's going to finish what he started at UCF and coach the bowl game. I gained a ton of more respect for him, even more so in this process that he's going to do that. So kudos to him, and we'll see what happens with there. But otherwise, pretty dull conference championship weekend, honestly.
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, you look at most of these and they're pretty decisive wins. And I would also give props to Frost for that, because I was wondering about that myself. I figured he probably would be motivated to make a statement and coach that last game in the in a New Year's Six Bowl and see what they got. It would be a lot of fun. Worth a shot, So let's go to our friend Yachts, and Any additional thoughts? We'll get right to coaching right after this, since there aren't any games this week. I guess you could preview the Army-Navy game. Like, who would you root for in the Army-Navy game if you had a dog in the fight? I guess we can get that, too. All right, John, it's all yours.
Hey, well, there's no way I could compete with Andy and John as far as college football knowledge. If this, you know, you just may as well hang up the phone if that's what I was supposed to do. However, and as you know, I was pretty much in an airport on Saturday, so I did not see any of those games. So I really have nothing to add. But I will say this, anytime Ohio State does not make the Final Four is a great season, in my opinion. So I'll just leave it at that.
I like that. That's a good button. So let's move on then. Let's talk about the coaching, the latest coaching hires. And they're, you know, just we see new ones every week, but I think this might be the last wave of the large coaching hires. Maybe. We'll see. But big ones this week. You know, it had been talked about much of the year, and it finally happened. Jimbo Fisher left Florida State, and he is going to Texas A&M. And how about this? Willie Taggart, who only spent a year at Oregon, big Florida guy. FSU wanted him after the fact. Willie wanted to go back to Florida. I think it's a great fit. So Florida State takes Willie Taggart to be their next coach. Pretty awesome. And then as we mentioned Frost already, going to Nebraska. And people really like it. Like, I think people really think that this is legit. They think that Nebraska could be back. Like, they could be Michigan back. Or, you know, Ohio State back. That's going to be very, so obviously, a lot of hopes from the college experts. I'm not really sure where I am with it yet. We have to see what the recruiting's like, but his track of success is pretty good. So we'll take a look. Finally, this happened yesterday. SMU's Chad Morris. I feel like he's a solid coach. He will be the new coach at Arkansas. So again, Frost, Nebraska, Jimbo to A&M, Taggart to Florida State, and Chad Morris to Arkansas. Let's go back to Andy and get your thoughts about the coaching hires.
Yeah, money talks. These universities to dangle the carrot. There's no loyalty on either side of the argument. I'm not smart enough to really figure it out or really understand it all. But I mean, I think Jimbo Fisher is making a guaranteed $75 million a year. I think it's 75 guaranteed, but I'm not positive. That's just hard to say no. And he said all these things in his press conference that A&M is like the number one place he wants to be. And let's be honest, I mean, it's probably easier to recruit Florida State than it is A&M, but the incentive is the almighty dollar. So he's over there. It's going to be hard. I think he's going to have to compete with Alabama and in Georgia and an improved Auburn team. So, you know, just to compete in that SEC is going to be hard. Whereas in previous years, you know, he was almost the king in the ACC until, you know, Clemson has taken it to the next level in the last 3 years. You know, we forget Clemson was known for being, you know, doing everything right, you know, for 50 minutes out of a 60-minute game, and then they Clemson it up. But, you know, Dable has changed that narrative rather quickly. Taggart, good for him. It's funny, you know, when Oregon got Taggart, the last thing on their mind was, oh, he's only going to be here for a year. And that's just crazy. I don't know. That's pretty crazy. Because I know Oregon's not going to be compared to national tradition programs like Ohio State or Michigan or you know, Alabama or, you know, Florida in its heyday. But they were very prolific, kind of was under the radar for a long time up until Joey Harrington kind of made his mark. But, you know, Phil Knight, a lot of money there. Chip Kelly put that place really on the map. And I mean, they're kind of in dire straits right now because I think Taggart brought his Levitt, I think that's his name, his DC with him. And he was an instrumental part of that team. So, Oregon's going to have to really start from scratch. And, you know, we'll see what Jimbo does at Texas A&M. I think he just didn't mesh with the administration at Florida State, and the money was just too good to pass up. All these schools, man, I think at one point Notre Dame was paying Tyrone Willingham and Trevor Rice on the buyout. So these schools are filthy rich, and they always say there's not enough money, no money to pay these players. But buying out these already rich, ridiculous contracts and just heaping more money, throwing money at these other coaches, it's just crazy. I mean, Herm Edwards is getting a lot of money. They're probably paying Todd Graham millions of dollars to not do anything. And meanwhile, Tennessee's list of candidates look awfully, you know, average. And one guy was on an MTV show like 10 years ago with a high school coach. So, you know, they didn't want Shiano, and now they're just like really in the muck here.
That's pretty rough. Yeah, Tennessee has really fallen off. And our friend Ron in New Jersey can't make it tonight. He'll send his picks via the text, but I'm sure he'd have a lot to say about how far Tennessee's fallen. It's really kind of sad. And I don't think they've come up with a coach yet. You're right. I don't think there's a coach yet, so we'll find out tomorrow if that changes. But back to John in Connecticut. Let's get your thoughts on the coaching hires.
Yeah, Dave, kind of actually breaking news on Tennessee. It looks like the defensive coordinator from Alabama, Jeremy Pruitt, is in line to be their next coach. So that's just kind of breaking within the last 20 minutes. We'll see. I mean, there's been agreements with a lot of other guys, so this could fall through too, but that's what we're seeing on the internet at this point, the DC of Bama, Jeremy Pruitt, to be Tennessee's coach. So that's the latest rumor. But as for these other things, I mean, you know, Jimbo Fisher to A&M, I mean, that's just – it's kind of weird in my opinion. There had to be some other sort of thing going on there to make him not want to be at Florida State, because his chance to win a national title just went way down. I mean, he's proven he can do it at Florida State. I mean, it's just them and Clemson is kind of the top dogs in the ACC. I mean, there's really no one else threatening their stature as the program to beat, getting all the recruits and whatnot. And now you're in the SEC West with Bama and Auburn and, you know, LSU. I mean, it's going to be really tough for him. I'd be very impressed if he can make the playoff or make the national title at Texas A&M. But he certainly has the financial backing of the administration and, you know, all that oil money. I mean, $75 million. I'm pretty sure I would switch my job, too, for a guaranteed $75 million, that's for sure. So can't blame him for that. We'll see what happens. So a great get for A&M. And then Taggart to Florida State is interesting. I guess he was a huge Florida State fan as a kid, a young adult, and he grew up there. So I guess it's kind of his dream job kind of thing. But I'm a little skeptical, and you know, from Florida State standpoint, I mean, he did a nice job at Oregon this year. I mean, they lost their quarterback for most of the year, and they still, you know, won 7 games, I think. But he's pretty green in terms of coaching on a national high profile level. Did a nice job at South Florida, but then just going to Oregon here, I would have, you know, maybe a couple more years for him at a high profile job to take that next step up to Florida State. And I think Oregon to Florida State is kind of a step up. So we'll see, but you know, certainly his offices have been dynamic, and we'll see if he can continue that in the ACC. Yeah. And then, like I mentioned earlier, all these coaches leaving the AAC, like Frost going to Nebraska, now Chad Morris going to Arkansas. I mean, you've seen it over the last couple of years. It's kind of the breeding ground for all these coaches in the Power Five leagues. And it's kind of sad, because the just goes to show you like how much respect the AAC is getting. Yet at the same time, UCF gets no respect this year for going 12-0 in that league. That's sending all these coaches everywhere. It's kind of a joke. But UCF actually made their next coach official yesterday. They hired Josh Heupel, who, of course, used to play quarterback at Oklahoma, was, I believe, a coach at Oklahoma for a while. And then the last couple of years, he's been the offensive coordinator at Missouri. And they had a pretty thick offense this year. I saw it up close in person. I mean, UConn is not a very good team, but they just absolutely just destroyed us. And their offense, I think they won 6 or 7 games to end the year, and I think they scored 40 points in each game. So you can kind of see where the UCF administration is going with their coaches. Instead of hiring an old retread
like Herm Edwards, I mean, I still can't believe that from Arizona State. They find another young up-and-coming coordinator, kind of just like they did with Scott Frost. And who knows, maybe Heupel will be gone in 2 years. But you know what? If they're undefeated, you know, who cares? I mean, like, if you want to bring coaches in and out like that, I mean, it's really not a bad place to be. And he's going to have a great team to start off next year. I mean, all the guys that, you know, all the players that were instrumental in UCF winning all their games are pretty much going to be back. So pretty much a no-brainer for him to take that job at this point. So really the only major job open right now, let me see here, it's pretty much Oregon. If that report on Tennessee is true, Oregon would be the only school in the Power Five that has an opening. And the rumors for that I've seen, actually, you wouldn't believe it, would be Jim McElwain, who was just fired at Florida this year. He was actually a hot candidate when Oregon needed a coach last year. So maybe he'll get the job this time. We'll see. But certainly a lot of movement. And it's going to be interesting to see some of these guys on the sidelines next year in these new places.
You know, if McElwain gets the job, it'll be another chance for him to prove that he's the offensive genius that everyone thought he was when he was a coordinator. So I'm on the fence on that one, too. So it really depends. So we'll see what happens in that. I'm going to give Yachts one quick comment, because I wondered if you were also intrigued by the idea that somebody's going to get an NFL retread to coach a team. Did that Herm Edwards news surprise you as well?
Oh, yeah. When I first heard that on the radio, I was like, is this for real? And the first thing I could think of was at least there'll be some entertaining press conferences out at Arizona State. So I think the local media there is probably happy about this, because it'll be, you know, you're waiting for him to have a zinger or something like that. So, you know, each week will be good for that. But, I mean, I didn't follow it closely enough, but was he even rumored to get into college? As far as I knew, he was on Russo's show every week talking about the NFL, and then all of a sudden he's the head coach of Arizona State. I'm like, all right, you know, sounds good, I guess, if you can get it. But he's, how old is he, like 66?
Yeah,
or something like that?
I mean, pretty, yeah,
something like that,
something like,
right,
that, yeah.
65, you know, he's got to be in his 60s, and he's got a lot of energy, I'll give him that. You know, I guess he'll be out on the recruiting trail, and I'm sure he'll have a support staff to help him do that. But it really just did seem like it came out of nowhere.
It did. And, John in Connecticut, I can give it back to you to reprise that a little bit, because if you remember, Robert in Virginia speculated that because Herm Edwards' agent is the guy, I forget who it was, AD or whoever it was, used to be Herm Edwards' agent too, and that was a big reason why he was hired. It really did seem to come out of nowhere. I mean, I don't remember any real rumblings about it. And then just like in 2 days, we just go from nothing to him suddenly getting hired. It was a definite shock. So any other thoughts on that, John?
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the only reason he got the job. I mean, honestly, he hasn't coached in college in 30 years. I mean, it's just preposterous that that was the first call they made. And I don't know if any of you saw, they put out some just nonsensical statement about running the athletic department like a business. And it was like, oh my God, they used all this terminology that was just absolutely crazy. I would love to find the quote and read it, because your mind would be blown. And you know, it's not going to do anything. Like Robert said last week, I can't wait to pick against them next year. It's just going to be a complete dumpster fire.
I was having fun picking against them with Todd Graham. This is even better. I think this will be a lot of fun. So we'll see what happens. All right, guys, let's move on to the NFL. Oh, yikes. Well, there was, how do you say this? Was there, would we call it uneven football last week? There were some good games. I mean, the Packer game went to overtime. You had the Vikings in a tight win against the Falcons. You had, let's see, anything else? Well, the Giants made it competitive against the Raiders. I guess there's that. But the Saints and Panthers were going back and forth for a little bit. Then there was some ugly football. And then it just got absolutely brutal on Monday night when the Steelers and the Bengals started trading cheap shots with one another. That was a bad night. That was a bad optic for the NFL. There's really no way around it. But that's basically it. Let's talk about last week's action. We'll start with Andy in Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, there's something for everything. I mean,
depending on what you like to watch, there was that. I mean, I watched the Patriots kind of grinded it out for the most part. Buffalo kind of held them to field goals early on, and Buffalo couldn't move the ball themselves. So this kind of a it was windy, it was cold, it was kind of a boring game. Patriots took care of business. Buffalo's still in the playoff picture, though, because there's a lot of teams that are basically 6-6. And it's going to be a battle for that last wild card spot in the AFC. As you guys saw in that Charger-Brown game, the recipe was there for LOL Chargers moment. I mean, they did everything but get in the end zone in that first half. I was watching that game. I had Chargers minus 13.5, so see Rivers go up and down the field, and then they have to settle for field goals. But they hung on. They hung on. They did what they needed to do. Seattle had a pretty good game. The Eagles, I think, had covered 7, 8, maybe even 9 games in a row, whatever it was. And, they fumbled the ball. I think it was Sheldon Richardson had a big hit right when the Eagles were going in for 7. They fumbled it around the 1-yard line. That was a game changer. Wilson ended up with like 3 touchdowns, running backs by committee. Mike Davis showed up for a little bit. So that was kind of a surprise. I thought it would be a pretty close game. Seahawks being, by game time, 3.5-point underdogs. And they ended up winning rather comfortably, which was a surprise. So, it's going to be an interesting race for that NFC West, because even though the Rams are 9-3, Seattle's 8-4, Seattle already beat the Rams. So if there's a tiebreak scenario, it would lean towards Seattle at the moment. But, there's still a quarter left in the season. What else was there? You guys thought that Monday night game was a disaster. Someone can take that. What else did we watch? Oh, the Jets. That was like a Lou Lang game. 5 minutes into the game, the Chiefs are up 14-0. And we're like, all the Chiefs needed was just a couple of series on offense against the Jets, and they find their mojo. And they score 30 points, and they still lose the game. Something's rotten in Kansas City. They'll have to figure it out in some way, some shape or form. And the Falcons are a bunch of fucking frauds. Dan Quinn, whatever his name is, I get the Vikings. They have a good defense. I get that the defense of the Vikings is first class, but for the Falcons to not score a single touchdown against them at home. I was just thinking about the game against Miami when they lost at home to Miami of all teams. And, there was one situation in that game. I think it was 15 to 6 or something like that. Late in the game, 6 minutes left, fourth and 2. It was like 3rd and 8 or whatever. And Matt Ryan throws short of the first down marker because he's a baby. And they settle for the field goal. And I'm like, they might not get the ball back here. I don't know what Quinn's doing. They might not get the ball back. And sure enough, they don't get the ball back. He uses all the timeouts before the 2-minute warning. It's just like, I'm not a clock specialist, but Jesus, that was terrible. That's a terrible job by the Atlanta Hawks. That will probably influence my picks later today. And the NFC South is just completely up for grabs. Should be interesting. There's definitely, I'm biased against the Patriots, so I think obviously they're the number one team in the league, but then you have to look at the NFC for all the other talent. I really like what the Rams are doing. It doesn't seem like they're afraid or they're running into that wall. And I know they're young and they don't have any experience playing December, January football, but if anything, you can make an argument that they're playing better on the road than they are at home. That Dallas game, the Arizona game last week, Gabbert didn't play that well. But and then John's been on point with the Jaguars. I haven't watched him enough. and I still can't really get behind them. I know they're a tough watch offensively, but every time John seems to pick Jacksonville, sure enough, they end up having a show. And you know, they're 8-4 some way, somehow, but we'll see what happens with them as we head to the home stretch of the season.
Yeah, I got to give it to Jacksonville. I still can't believe that they have the record that they do, but their defense is the real thing. I mean, that is going to be very interesting, and I certainly was looking at them as far as possible picks. So let's go to John in Connecticut and get your thoughts on last week's action.
Yeah, I mean, just a note on the Jags. I mean, I think they have probably the best defense in the NFL. I mean, you know, just from playing stupid fantasy football, I mean, you learn some stuff about these teams, and I don't think they've allowed a 100-yard receiver all year. I mean, when you're making fantasy lineups, you literally do not play quarterbacks and receivers against the Jaguars because they have two shutdown corners, not just one. Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Boye, they're the best corner tandem in the league. Not to mention, then they get the guy from Marcel Darius from Buffalo, and he really has helped them stuff the run. So their defense is just unbelievable. And if it's going to be their downfall, it's going to be obviously Blake Bortles turning the ball over in the playoffs. But if there's any team in the AFC that I think could maybe beat the Patriots, it's the Jaguars, just because of their defense. I mean, I know, Dave, you love the Steelers, but they're just too up and down for me. But you know, I think the Jags, obviously talented, but they're just way too inconsistent. And as you saw the other night, literally, I mean, they had to get out of another huge hole against the Bengals. So I think when it comes down to it, I think the Jaguars are probably the team most equipped anyway to go toe-to-toe with the Patriots. We'll see if they can even get that chance. But just a great year by them. And it's all starts from their defense, like I said. It's by far the best in the league, in my opinion. So as for the rest of the games, that Sunday night game was interesting. You know, if you look at the Eagles' schedule, you know, they really haven't played many good teams. And they've beaten up on the bad teams, and that's what you have to do in the NFL. You take the wins when you can, because it's hard to win, but they really haven't faced many great teams, and they finally faced a test the other night, and Seattle, you know, gave it to them pretty good. I will say that if Wentz does not fumble that ball going in, I forget what the score was. It might have been 17-3 at that point, I think, but if he doesn't fumble that ball, it might be a different game, obviously, but the Seahawks, you know, they defended their home field and got the win. Even in the loss, I mean, you can just see the ability that Carson Wentz has. That one throw that he made, it was like 50 yards down the field off his back foot, like running to the right. I mean, that was just unbelievable. And that guy's got a ton of talent. He's definitely a top quarterback in the NFL and for years to come. I mean, that was just really impressive. So we'll see if the Eagles again now coming up this week, another road game. I believe they stayed out west to practice and whatnot. Another huge road game at the Rams. So again, for playoff positioning in the NFC, this is just a monster game. So we'll see what happens with that on Sunday. You know, the Saints defended their home field against the Panthers. I mean, kind of not surprising there. You know, Cam Newton really hasn't had that good of a season. You know, he's had his moments. I mean, he had a great game against the Patriots, and then another great game again. I forget, there was like a 2-week stretch where he just played out of his mind. But other than that, he's been kind of average. Their defense has been pretty good, but the Saints really kind of, you know, they get the leg up now on the division, and all these NFC South teams are replaying each other. I think Atlanta, their last four games are against the NFC South, so that division is really going to be coming right down to the wire. The Raiders won. You know, Geno Smith gave it his best shot for McAdoo, and that's over now since McAdoo is now gone. You know, all the Giants fans can breathe a sigh of relief and get Eli to play for them again for the last 4 weeks of the year. And the Chiefs and Jets game, still, you know, the Chiefs offense finally broke out of their funk. I mean, Alex Smith had a great game, but their defense couldn't stop the Jets, which is crazy to say, but 38-31, McCown played great. And the Chiefs, it's an interesting race now for the AFC West. I'm sure Yacht can shed some light on the three teams there, the Chargers, the Raiders, and the Chiefs, on what that race will look like heading in the last 4 weeks. But anyway, who would have thought that after the Chiefs started 5-0? I mean, just a crazy, crazy collapse by them. And finally, I'll mention the Packers. Really did not play a good game at all. I think in the second half, before the last drive where the Packers tied the game on a field goal, I don't think they had a first down in the entire half. I mean, the yardage
difference was like 200-10 in the second half. I mean, the Bucks just went up and down the field, and the Packers could do nothing but a lot of stupid mistakes, really, from Jameis Winston, just taking sacks and bad throws, kept the Packers in the game, and then they made a drive and tied the game, and then they finally had a nice drive in overtime and won it. So they stay alive for one more week. By all accounts, Rodgers has been throwing it like 60 yards down the field in practice, so I'm assuming he'll be ready to play next week in Carolina. But all that means is they need to beat the Browns this Sunday, and I'm actually really, really nervous about this game because the Browns have been playing much better. The talent they have on their team is so much better than it was earlier in the season. I mean, Josh Gordon was not there. Corey Coleman was hurt. So this is a completely different team for most of the season, and Kaiser's been playing better. I honestly would not be surprised at all if the Browns won this game. So Packers just have to somehow find a way to win, and then Rodgers can come back next week, and we'll see what happens. But it doesn't mean anything because the NFC this year, you're not going to get in the playoffs at 9-7. You have to be 10-6. So the Packers cannot lose this game in Cleveland, and I am dreading the fact that they could lose this. So they just need to win, and then give us some fans some hope with Rodgers back on the field. So overall, an interesting week last week, and it's good to see some of these top teams matching up, as we'll see coming up this weekend too.
Yeah, it's we'll do some previews before we get into picks. The matchups this week are really good. Like, there's some really good games, and I'm gonna just do nods to one other team that we hadn't been mentioned yet. Actually, two, but one's a negative nod. But the positive nod goes to the Niners for starting Jimmy Garoppolo, and it's very interesting because a lot of Niner fans that I know have been speculating about how much danger there could be in starting a guy with a terrible offensive line like the 49ers have, but they gave it a try, and I think the 49ers even fell behind in Chicago, but they came back and they won the game. I mean, it wasn't a great game. They won 15-14, but a lot of excitement and buzz about Garoppolo. People really think that he's good, and I think once I get a chance to watch him do a full game, it'll be I'll get to see for myself how much he brings to the table, but a lot of reason for optimism in San Francisco. On the other side of the coin, you look back at the AFC West, and we've already talked about the Chiefs sliding, but how about the Broncos? They just look completely helpless right now. I mean, it doesn't get any worse than losing to the Dolphins 35-9, and I think at least two or three of those touchdowns were defensive touchdowns by Miami. I mean, they look hideous. That team looks like a joke. So now, all of a sudden, as we segue to our friend Yachts, the division race looks pretty gettable because the Raiders have been a touch and go. You know, the Chiefs are sliding. The Broncos have fallen. They can't get up. It's a 6-6 tie for three teams in that division. So, the Chargers had a little dogfight with Cleveland. They got out of it. So now let's give it to Yachts and get your thoughts about last week's action and where the Chargers are now in this AFC West race.
Well, the first thing I want to mention is last year I was on this show and I talked about the three, the Bengals, the Texans, and the Falcons. And basically, until proven otherwise, they're the Bengals, Texans, and the Falcons. Now, I'll give the Texans a pass because Deshaun Watson was looking really good. He got hurt. Fine. Okay. The Bungles. They bungled that game on Monday, right? I mean,
yep.
You know, I watched the first half in the plane, slowly but surely, as I'm, listening to the second half driving home. I'm like, there's no way they're winning this game. It was just pointing to everything that they always do to end up losing. And then I actually got home right when that field goal was being kicked. So I waited in my car before I went inside to hear if he made it. And there was no doubt in my mind he was making that field goal. Now you talk about the Falcons. As I said in last year's Super Bowl, before the Super Bowl started, I'm like, I don't trust any team that loses to the Chargers at home to do anything. So, of course, they have an epic collapse in that Super Bowl. This year they look, they've been good, but they've been the Falcons. And I was not surprised at all last week with the way they played, and this will be a tough game. I don't know that they'll win. I'm not sure who was going to win that game against the Saints. But at the end of the day, do I think the Falcons are going to win the Super Bowl, which is basically why we're all here, right? No. The answer is no, I don't. As far as the AFC, until proven otherwise, you know, how can I think a team is going to go into New England if they are the number one seed? Because I know they're still in a battle with Pittsburgh. But how do I think a team is going to go in there and win until I see it? I know the Chiefs did it in week one this season, but, you know, that's an anomaly to me. I just don't – I don't know what that – who that team is going to be. So until it happens, it's a boring pick, whatever, but – I got to think that way, right? Now, as far as that Seattle game on Sunday, you know, the kind of echoing what John said, you look at the Eagles' schedule, they play the AFC West, so there's really not any great team in that division. And then they play the NFC West, so there's a couple good teams there. But and then their own division isn't very good. So if you look at the schedule overall, I mean, I'm not going to take away anything away from a team with one loss, because in the NFL it's hard to win every week, so to only lose one is a difficult thing. However, they went to Seattle. I don't know how often Seattle is ever a home underdog. I mean, I Andy and John and probably you would know that more than me, but I can't imagine it's really ever happens. So I'm not, and I know they're banged up, but I still wasn't overly surprised that Seattle ended up winning that game. As far as the Chargers division, the Chiefs, you know, I know they're falling apart. They're 6-6. They started off 5-0. I don't know how long that's going to last, because I really think they have a good team when I look at their roster. I'm like, you know, they were winning 14-0 last week, and I'm like, okay, you know, the Jets will play hard, but oh man, it would be really good for them, for the Chiefs to lose this game. And then as it going on, like, I can't believe they actually collapsed and lost that game. So I don't know what's going on there. Kareem Hunt is a big thing, right? Because in the beginning of the season he was unstoppable, and more recent weeks he hasn't done that much. I don't know. I can't imagine they're just going to keep losing every week. They play the Raiders this week, which is obviously a huge game. They're both 6-6. And the Chargers play the Redskins, which, you know, on paper, if you look at the Chargers roster compared to Washington, I think the Chargers are better. Does that mean I think they're going to win the game? I don't know. They're playing a lot better. They haven't been doing a lot of chargering lately outside of that Jacksonville game. But they started off 0-4. They're 6-6 now. So that means they were 6-2 in their last eight. One was at New England, which they lost by 8 points. Okay, fine. You go to New England, you're going to lose. I'm not going to get that upset about that. The Jacksonville game, that one, I mean, that was the, if you look up the word chargering, you would, this season, you would point to the Jacksonville game and the Miami game, those two. So they're 6-6. They could easily be 8-4. They could have won week one against Denver. That blocked field goal that could have put the game, that would have put the game into overtime. Even that Eagle game came down to the end. They just could not stop the Eagles from getting first downs. The Chief game week three, they got killed. So, okay, that's a legit loss. And then the Patriot game. So, like, I you know, they could easily be 8-4, as good as 10-2, but they're 6-6. So that kind of sums them up. But I'm honestly not mad. It's not like I'm going to come on here and scream about them, because they're, you know, they started off 0-4 and they're 6-6. So I'm actually happy. Now, last week, the Brown game was interesting because, like Andy alluded to, if you just looked at the way the Chargers were playing up until they got into the red zone, they were doing everything they wanted to do. Then they get to the red zone and they can't do a thing, and they end up settling for field goals. At one point, they missed the first one. Then they make 2-6-0. And I even said to you, if you remember, I'm like, all of this, the Browns are still only, you know, if they score a TD, they're going to be winning despite completely being dominated on the offensive side. And sure enough, they actually come down and take the lead 7-6. But a big point in that game was right after that, which was before halftime, the Chargers came down, ended up kicking a field goal, so they actually went in up 9-7. So that made me feel a little bit better, because, you know, to answer that TD with a field goal there was big. And then, you know, the Browns, you know, for me it was nice because the Browns are 1-1 and 1-30 in the last 31 games, and the one was against the Chargers on Christmas Eve last year. So I wanted revenge this year. So I was, you know, it sounds insane because it's the Browns, but I was like, I want blood this year. But anyway, they're not Kaiser. I like kind of a lot of the plays that they ran. Gordon's tough. But at the end of the day, I'm glad to get a win. And now it's a very interesting game against the Redskins this week. I'm not sure what to expect.
I'm not either, actually. That could be an interesting matchup. Let's look at some of the other matchups this week, and we'll get to them in picks first, and we'll see if there's anything left over we can cover later, but I'll run them down first. We have on Thursday night, which is tomorrow, which is today if you're listening to the podcast now, New Orleans versus Atlanta. The Saints are really playing pretty good football. And they had a pretty good divisional battle against Carolina. That one went back and forth, and they ended up pulling away, and they won that game. Atlanta, they need this because I think if they don't win, their chances of making the playoffs are very thin. I think they need this game. So it's a big matchup, and it's a Thursday game, so short rest. It really is hard to tell who to select in that one. And onward to the rest of the weekend. We mentioned the Chargers at home. They're playing the Redskins. And I don't know what to expect. It could be an interesting game, not an easy game for either side. So it could be a big moment for either of these two teams. Also on the schedule, you have the Raiders in Kansas City, and I don't know what either of these teams are right now. I mean, the Chiefs, gosh, I mean, goodness, they've been so bad lately. I mean, it's crazy. They score points, they still can't win. Vikings against Carolina. We mentioned Carolina already. We mentioned the Vikings already. And I don't know. Could there be a letdown for Minnesota after that big win at Atlanta? I don't know. Same thing for Seahawks versus Jaguars. That looks like that could be a fun game. You have the Eagles in against the Rams, and with the fires going on, it certainly adds another layer to the matchup. But on paper, it looks like a very good matchup of two very good defenses. So that should be a fun game. And Baltimore at Pittsburgh, why it's Sunday night, well, I guess people like the ratings for it, but I don't know what to expect in that one either. So there you go. Those are the games. Let's go to the picks, and we'll start with my picks, and I'll be really brief because I want to hear from Andy after this. So let's begin. Here we go. First of the picks this week, we start game number one, and we'll be really fast. So go Broncos +1 against the Jets. They got to win sometime. I think eventually maybe things will just go right for them and they'll get some luck and maybe even a pick six. You know, the defense seems to still be pretty good for fantasy purposes for whatever reason, even though they're getting killed in some of these games. So I can't explain it, but we'll go Broncos +1. Game number two, we will take the home team, Rams -2.5 versus the Eagles. I don't know if the fire situation is going to motivate the Rams extra or what, but even if there was no fire situation, I still think the Rams would have won this game. So Rams -2.5 to go with Broncos +1 for week number 15. Okay, Andy, it's your pitch. Go ahead and let's hear your week 15 picks, or week 14, sorry.
All right, thanks, Dave. Not really confident in any of these picks, but game number one, we're actually going to take Case Keenum on the road. I know a month ago, you'd be like, why would you ever take Case Keenum on the road? But here we are, and we're going to do it. They're giving 2.5 at Carolina. And listen, I would think this line would be almost the other way around, but it's not. Minnesota's actually giving the points on the road, and their defense is strong. You know, past couple of weeks, they've made quarterbacks look rather pedestrian, as we mentioned with our little rant. They didn't let Matt Ryan score a touchdown the week before. You know, Stafford looked like dog do. Granted, he might have been hurt, but who knows? You know, Minnesota is just kind of, you know, building a pretty strong resume. I think they're 10-2. Certainly not flashy. It didn't look good early in the year when the Florida State running back got hurt for the year, but you know, their team is built around the defense. That receiver, Thaleen, is actually really good. He stretches out the field. They got a very good tight end. They're just very methodical. And Carolina is just a little too up and down for me. Basically, Cam Newton is a very moody quarterback. You know, when he's doing well and he's making all the first down celebrations and he's smiling, you know, he look like world beaters. But when he's sulking and he's, you know, he takes a lot of late hits. So I'll be fair. They call the ticky-tack, but when he actually gets hit, they don't call the late hit. But he takes a punishment back there. And I don't know, they can't find themselves too consistently offensively. Olsen's, you know, they thought he was coming back. He came back and he hurt himself again. You know, Funchess is their number one receiver, but he disappears. The kid from Stanford, she's just kind of underwhelming compared to Kamara, who they could have gotten instead. I don't have a good feeling about Carolina, so I'm just going to take a risk and take Minnesota on the road, giving 2.5 for game number one. Game number two, we're gonna take Arizona getting 3 from Tennessee. Why are we taking Arizona? They're not going to the playoffs, but they've got Blaine Gabbert playing quarterback. Elias Fitzgerald on a fantasy team, I guess. So, yeah, we're going to take Arizona. This is basically an anti-Tennessee pick. And Tennessee's 8-4, Jacksonville's 8-4. But when you look at Jacksonville's schedule, you're like, okay, I can see why they're 8-4. And then you look at Tennessee, and, some of their losses are just crappy losses. You know, they lost to Oakland week one. Then they lost to Miami. It was a battle of backup quarterbacks. I watched way too much of that game. I think it was Castle and more. Then they got their doors blown open by Houston, and they gave up like almost 50 points, maybe even more than 50 points. That was like Watson's I'm coming out party. And then they got killed on a Thursday night to the Steelers. They're just somehow, some way, they're 8-4. But they don't really do anything particularly good. When you watch the Titans, you're like, I'm going to watch the Titans. Why do you think they're good? Like, what makes them good? Their quarterback's not very good. They got a couple decent running backs. Travis Henry has gotten 2 miraculous covers when they've been running up the clock, and he's broken one for touchdowns. Delanie Walker's a decent tight end, but their defense sucks. I guess they have a good field goal kicker. They're just kind of a scrummy 8-4 team. And I don't think they deserve to be giving 3 points to Arizona on the road. And Arizona's pesky. They compete. They beat Jacksonville a couple weeks ago. Arians is kind of a delicate genius as a head coach, but he's pretty good. So I'm going to take Arizona. Tennessee might not give Arizona the respect that they deserve. And I think Arizona can easily win this game outright. You're getting 3. So my 2 picks are Arizona getting 3 at home against the Titans, and the Minnesota Vikings giving 2.5 on the road against the Panthers.
All right, thanks for the picks, Andy. And let's now go to the Ron in New Jersey picks for week number 14. Here we go. Game number 1, Ron selects the Raiders +4 at the Chiefs. And for game number 2, he's going to go head-to-head with my Bronco pick. And instead, Ron will select the Jets -1 at the Broncos. So, you know, again, the Broncos have been so awful. I wouldn't really know. I mean, even with the Jets, I realize they lost. They went out and they beat Kansas City. But, I mean, look, this is a game you could pick either team and you could go either way. So, once again, he has Raiders +4. And Jets -1, Ron in New Jersey's week 14 picks. Okay, let's move it along, and let's go to John in Connecticut. And John, we're ready for your picks.
All right, Dave, we'll make it quick. Game 1, we'll go with the same there as Ron. We're going to take the Raiders +4 in Kansas City. I guess it's just I'm going to keep betting the streak, I guess. You know, keep going against the Chiefs until they prove otherwise that they can actually win a game here. It's weird. Their games on the road have been very high scoring, but at home in Arrowhead, they've been very low scoring. Their defense has come to play at home, and the games have been relatively close. And that's what I kind of see here. It's a close divisional game. The Chiefs might win, but, you know, 4 points is a little bit too much for a team that's lost 6 out of their last 7 games. The Raiders should be a little healthier this week with Crabtree coming back from suspension. Maybe Cooper will be back. We'll have to see about him, but I think this will just be a really close game, and you know you're getting 4 points. So give me Raiders plus 4 for game one. And then game two, we will we'll take the Chargers. Actually, we'll go with the minus 6 here. Obviously, we've discussed how well they've been playing recently. And then the Redskins, I think this is more about the injuries to the Redskins. I mean, last week before they played the Cowboys, I don't think even if they practiced because they had so many injuries, they couldn't even, out of fear of having more guys getting hurt. I mean, they had literally down to like backups playing on the offensive line, where they have guards trying to play tackle, and that is not going to work against Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. I mean, that's one of the strengths of the Chargers team. And if Kirk Cousins, he's a really good quarterback, but you know, if you saw it last week against the Cowboys, he was just getting completely engulfed on every play, and they couldn't run their offense. And you kind of see the same thing happening here. I usually like taking the Redskins as a dog because of, you know, a backdoor potential, number one. And then, like I said, Cousins is pretty good and usually keeps teams in games. The Seattle game is evidence of that earlier this year. But I just think they're just way too banged up right now to play a competitive game. I think the Chargers will win this by like 7 to 10 points. And they're playing great right now. You might, again, just ride the streak until they kind of stop it. So Chargers minus 6 for game one, and then Raiders plus 4 for the other pick this week.
All right. Thanks very much, John. And let's now bring it to the other John. That would be Yachts. Yachts, it's your pitch.
Hey, Dave. I'm going to go against you with that Jet game. I really like the Jets minus 1. To me, Denver's a dead team. They were 3-1. They're 3-9. The defense, which is a vaunted defense, is now like, they have zero quarterback. You know, I just think they're a dead team, and I don't think the Jets are a dead team. I think the Jets are, they play. I mean, they're 5-7. They're still alive for a wild card spot. They play hard. I mean, they were down 14-0 last week to the Chiefs, and they came back and won. McCown's having a better season than anybody could have ever dreamed that he would have. I think the Jets themselves, I mean, they could easily be 7-5 too, not 5-7, because they've been snake bitten a couple of times. So I know it's a home game in Denver, so that's always a factor. But I don't know. I just think Denver's kind of a dead team now, and they're playing out the string. The other game, I like the Packers. I know it's in Cleveland, but again, we discussed the futility of Cleveland earlier. They're 1-30 in their last 31. They're 4-40 in their last 44. I mean, just think about that for a second. 4-40, right? I mean, so I think I was looking at Cleveland's schedule before, and they play the Bears on Christmas Eve. I think that's the one game where if they're going to win this season, that's going to be the week. They kind of make it a Christmas Eve tradition, win once a year on Christmas Eve. The Packers also, I know, you know, obviously Rodgers isn't there, but they really battled the Steelers in that game. And then they won last week, so they're still fighting. And I know Cleveland's improved. They got Coleman and Gordon back, and they got the tight end's good. And, you know, They are an improved team. However, if you look at the way they, you know, each week, if you look at their scores, they still lose by a decent amount. It's not like they're losing every game by 2 or 3 points. So this is a 3-point spread, so I really like the Packers to cover.
All right. Thanks for the picks, John. Now, here's what's really funny about that game. The line opened at minus 6, so the Packers were a 6-point favorite when the line was first posted. It's been bet down to minus 3, so that I think that does bring about an interesting point. A lot of, I don't know, sudden interest in the Browns, but sometimes that can be a trap too, so you know, it's hard to really evaluate. So let's go back and see about some other games. Andy, any other games you want to take a look at before we sign off tonight?
Yeah, Lincoln Model's a really good game. I don't know who I'm going to wager on. Tomorrow, crystal ball might be a little more clear, but, you know, I hate Atlanta with a passion now, but sometimes you have to put emotions aside when you make a wager, and Atlanta is hungry. They really need it. But I said the same thing last week. You know, Minnesota didn't need the win as much as Atlanta did. Atlanta needed the win, and they still played like absolute dirt at home. and now you're at home again. And this is a different Saints team. You know, I don't like taking the Saints on the road either. This should be a game where I stay away. If I don't have this one, last week I shouldn't have bet on Stanford or USC because they both kind of, make me feel outraged. Cause I don't like betting against David Shaw. I don't like taking David Shaw. Same thing with USC. But the Saints on the road used to be do not take the Saints on the road. Don't take the Saints on the road. But they're different this year because Kamara has basically changed how they run as a team offensively, and Ingram. They basically are a two-headed dragon on offense from a running game standpoint, and Breeze doesn't really have to throw as many times as he's used to. So that minimizes his ass-clown moments on the road, and it also minimizes Sean Payton's ass-clown moments as a coach because they can – just be a little more methodical offensively. I mean, they're still very prolific, but the way they run the ball a lot more this year is definitely a new wrinkle. And in the past, Drew Brees, they've had to come, he puts up all these big numbers a lot of the times. You're down, 7 to 14 points early, so you do have to go to your offense passing game quicker than anticipated, and they never really had the running game like they do now. So it's going to be a really, you would think it'd be a high scoring game between those two teams. I just don't know who to take. It should be a stay away game. Maybe take the over on that one. And yeah, you mentioned that Steeler Raven game. Oh man, if you've had a bad Sunday and you're going to watch that game, good luck to you. I mean, geez, the Ravens are still, they're a crummy team, but they're fighting for a playoff spot. Lo and behold, I guess their offense is playing, but they lost Jimmy Smith for four games. I think it's four games. So their defense takes a hit. And I don't know. I mean, between the game where they scored 40 against the Dolphins and, recently they played better. So here they are. The Steelers, they're not going to look ahead towards New England because this game's, definitely important. It's a big rivalry, Ravens-Steelers. We all know that. Good luck if you want to watch that game. I had a lot of trouble. I think I made a tweet about this. Like, I had money on the Bengals on Monday night, and I was still bored stiff watching that game. Like, Russo brings up this thing called football fatigue. I might have had football fatigue just watching games from Friday night to Monday, like, nonstop.
Yeah, that can be a thing. And regardless of even out of context, that game was a very difficult watch. Andy, I'll be honest. If I wasn't rooting for the Steelers in that game, I would have been done in the third quarter. I would have probably moved on to something else. That was a tough game to watch. Absolutely. So let's go to John in Connecticut. Any thoughts about this week's action?
Yeah, I'm interested in those two late games, Eagles at Rams. It'd be a huge game for home field advantage purposes. If the Rams would win this, they'd jump over the Eagles into the number two spot in the NFC. We'll see if the Eagles can rebound from that game in Seattle. Gun to my head, I'd probably go with the Rams in this game just because they played so well at home this year, especially their defense. I mean, you just look at that game a couple weeks ago when they pretty much shut down the Saints and Drew Brees in that running game that's been so great all year. I mean, I know Kamara had a couple big runs. I mean, he's going to do that in every game. But for the most part, I mean, they shut down the Saints offense. And just in general, their defense has been great at home this year. So I would lean towards the Rams there. And then the Seahawks and Jaguars, as we've talked about, I'm very interested to see what Russell Wilson can do against this Jags defense. The Seahawks have always had problems traveling east. This is pretty much as long of a trip as you can make in the NFL going from Seattle to Jacksonville. And their offensive line is so bad, and we'll see if he can run around and make the plays and beat the Jaguars. And this is a huge game for both teams. So I'll really be looking forward to that one. I would kind of lean the Jaguars just because the Seahawks aren't very good on the road, but this is a game where, like last week, I knew the Jags. I mean, the Colts offense is just not very good. You knew they couldn't move the ball on Jacksonville, but here you could see Wilson, doing his magic and just kind of grinding out a win. So I'm very excited to watch that game. then obviously, you know, I'll be into the Browns Packers as I mentioned before, praying that the Packers can get out of there alive and, you know, Rodgers' collarbone scan can come back with a clear bill of health and we can go from there next week.
Yeah, because at the moment, the only way we're seeing Rodgers is through State Farm commercials. I'd be happy to see him back on the field. So,
Detroit.
Oh, man. All right, let's go to John in Stanford, a.k.a. Yachts, a.k.a. The patron of Bobby V's. Let's get your thoughts about this week's action.
One thing, I'm actually surprised Rodgers is coming back so quickly. When he first got hurt, I was like, wow, he's done for the season, no doubt. And then now he's looking like he's going to be back this season, which is amazing. I'm interested in the Thursday game, New Orleans-Atlanta. I like to rag on the Falcons, but it's a good game. I mean, it has the potential to be a really fun game. Could be some high power offenses in that game if you like that sort of thing. So that could be fun. That Eagle game's intriguing, of course. As far as that Steeler-Raven game, it's very interesting for the Chargers too, because the Ravens are 7-5. They're the sixth seed right now. So if Pittsburgh wins, that gives them a loss, which is nice because you want to have as many windows open as possible to get into the playoffs. Obviously, for the division, that Raider-Chief game is big. The Charger game, one thing is that I think when they do these spreads, they give, you know, there's always something about the home team, but the Chargers really don't have any home games. So, you know, that place is going to have more Redskin fans than Charger fans. There's no doubt in my mind. So that dynamic all season has been interesting and see how it plays out, kind of like the nobody wants us thing. And, you know, so lately it's been working. And then the big thing for me, which is not necessarily this week, but see how the games play out this week. But next Saturday night is Chargers Chiefs. So that can be a huge one. So we'll see.
Yep, we'll see indeed. Well, guys, that's about all the time we've got tonight as far as the program. Good luck to your picks, and thanks again for coming on, and hope you all have a great weekend, and enjoy Army-Navy. Let me ask you this question, basically. No, let's not waste time on Army-Navy. I don't think anyone cares. So, you guys all think Baker Mayfield takes it, right? Gonna be his reward to lose? I think so, too. Any rebuttals?
I think so.
No? Okay. No, this seems like a pretty clear case. I thought that maybe for a while Darnold was going to be in, but he just made too many interceptions this year. The one that's kind of surprising is that Saquon Barkley dropped off so much, because it seemed like that was his award for like 3 weeks, and then it just wasn't happening. And I think things really turned when they lost to Michigan State, and then from that point on, it's kind of tough to go with a guy on a losing on a team that's not that good. But they're not that bad, but they're not that good. You know what I mean? So anyway, that's it for me tonight. Take care, guys. And next week, we do our finale. John, thanks again for being the guest picker. And everyone else, we'll see you in a week. Thanks, guys. Take it easy.
Thank you. Good luck, everyone.
See you later.
All right, fellas. Good luck. And that's our program tonight. So thanks again, for everyone, for tuning in. And thanks to John in Stanford / Greenwich. Thanks to Andy in Seattle and John in Connecticut. And nods to the Biebs. Thanks for the well wishes from everybody regarding the fire. Hopefully we can get through this. We've been through fires before. So more of the same coming up through the rest of this week. So if you're looking for us, we're at DidCow on Twitter or www.didcow.com. Keep following us. We'll see you next time.